rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns are toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new
attention.
World order.
Attention.
Government is
an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones, Dutch Jones
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's again time for what? Dutch Jones. It's not Howdy Doody time. It's Dutch Jones time. It is 5:02 p.m. Pacific time on the date of what date are we going to give this? We're going to say the 27th of January 2011. It is a Thursday. And, of course, Thursdays mean that in the second hour we're going to have Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell. But you get me for an hour where I read things on the news, give you my views, sometimes share things that other people share with us. And so we're just glad that you're here. We welcome any new listeners that we have, and we hope the transition from UBroadcast to Ustream isn't confusing too many people. Like 1 minute before I went on the air, I got an email from somebody who's like, hey, where are you? So hopefully everybody's getting on board. Ustream seems to be much better, less dropouts, definitely better audio quality when I listen to the playbacks the next day, because I get up in the morning and listen to them and listen to all the mistakes I make and try to improve my radio presence and making sure that I don't let some bit of misinformation go out. Today's been a really strange day in the media. I think she tried to call earlier. Lane called. Every morning I get up, I Google specific topics, and then I read the articles, and of course, I Googled Shawna Ford, and there was some interesting developments in the Shawna Ford case today, and I'm going to wait to see if Lane calls in on the cell phone. She tried to call, and then it started doing that thing where it played music again. I've taken all the music off of my phone. I don't know why it jams, and I can't hear anybody, but hopefully it'll work. And if we're lucky, in the second hour, we're going to have Pastor Thomas McConnell from Rayville, Missouri, on continuing our discussion about Christian covenant communities, the importance of separating ourselves and taking over and incorporating little communities and clustering and meeting and rallying around certain areas. You know, Montana, of course, being one. Rayville would be one. We're here. The battles, the victories, those types of things that we can talk about. He'll be on the phone, and Pastor Warren Mark Campbell will be here also, and we're going to do that. If he doesn't call in, trust me, we'll have stuff to talk about. To the email, thank you so much. I got great emails. Somebody fall over? You okay? Oh, okay. Studio audience is falling off the bleachers. We've had to install these bleachers because now there's hundreds of people in the room. And they fall off, and we got to make sure we don't have any insurance per se, so we have to make sure they're okay. Stay out of the euchre seats. Got a great letter from a listener. I won't give his name because I wasn't given permission to, but he was thanking us for the pod people, acknowledging the pod people. He'd been a pod person for over a year. He listens to the archives that Olima puts up, and he cited specific dates that really had an impact on him, different pastors and, you know, that we've talked about, or sermons or teachings. It's great, and I love that. I love getting feedback from you guys. And don't forget to sign our guest book. People have kind of neglected that, and the form. I haven't been on, that's Lou's thing. I don't know what's been going on there. Lou doesn't have a mic today because we're set up for the pastor, and he's not here yet, so he can't defend himself. But check out the forum on dutchjones.info, dutchjones.info, dutchjones.info. Go to the forum, sign the guest book, click on the training stuff there. See what you can come up with as far as comments you want to leave, information. Just like right now, Scotty put something in there about the military base today that was on lockdown. It's a chemical weapon. I got to scroll back up because names always escape me when I get on the air. I'm a concept guy, not specifics. Where'd it go? Where is it, Scotty? Fort Dugway Army base was on lockdown. So you send stuff like that, it gives me a chance to read it, check it out, and it enhances the show. And you can post those in the forum, and then Lou will scour them and go, hey, check this out, or you can email them to us, or you can just, like Scotty just did, he just threw it up here in the chat room on dutchjones.info. So that would be a... Can you turn down that radio? I'm getting music through my headphones. It may be bleeding in, I don't know. Do you guys hear that? Or is it just on the speaker? Yeah, it was just on the speaker. So that's good. I got some other great email today talking about how they like what we're doing. They like the message, the way it's crafted, that they don't hear it anywhere else. I love getting those kind of emails. I don't mind getting complaints or, not complaints, but positive corrective letters, too, are great, too. So don't think that you can't send me that. I'm not just looking for accolades. But it's great to get up in the morning and go through them, because mostly what they are just forwards that I get. Everybody's forwarding me, you know, stuff, and that's a great tool right there. You know, I get all the articles and I read them, and it's like, you know, and then I kind of coalesce them and figure out which ones I want to talk about. And I never get to all of them because, you know, quite frankly, there's so many I forget about them, and then they don't become timely anymore. But that's how I do that. And I use the Facebook. You can go to Facebook and find us, and I put stuff up there and post stuff there. And then, like right now, I'm just scrolling through it, and I find articles. Usually, most of the time, I don't talk about half the ones I post because most of them I put on there because they're just funny. And like this first one I'm going to get into here. Remember, I think it was last week when North Africa, they were having the riots. Well, now Egypt's having them. It's like something's going on, and Hillary's over there running around. And I'm almost wondering if the leaders of these Muslim countries in Africa and the Arab Peninsula weren't cooperating with her. So now we're sending in some kind of counterinsurgency to rally up the youth and get them. One idiot, some 20-year-old guy in like Yemen, I think it was Yemen. Let me see here. It was either Yemen. Set himself on fire because he couldn't find a job. What kind of? I mean, these people are nuts. You know, I remember, you know, when I was a kid, the Buddhists doing that stuff in Vietnam and them talking about it on the news. You know, I remember back that far and then seeing it later. But I just can't imagine that all of a sudden that this stuff just flares up like this, unless it's being instigated by something or someone. And I'm pretty sure that it is the United States doing it. It just seems to be the modus operandi of our nation. We like to disable and topple, what's the word, not topple, just tear apart at their basis and make them fall and make it look like it was their own doing. Same thing they did in Central America, and look where that got us. Same thing they tried to do in Asia, and look where that got us. And now Africa and the Middle East, and we're not faring any better with this toppling of governments from within thing. I don't know why they keep trying it, except for, well, I do know why they're doing it. They need to destabilize the world in order to usher in a new world government. And these articles, they're great. People have been sending me all day about the different riots going on. Egypt. I mean, Egypt has always been like, oh, it's a great free Muslim nation. You know, they stopped whacking Israel and fighting with them, and now they're, you know, actually, you know, an ally, and now they're fighting amongst themselves. And it's very, very interesting. Back to the border stuff. I got some emails. They caught an is this the one? I got to find it here. They caught an imam breaking through the Mexican border in a trunk of a BMW. Well, he was actually past the border. And it turns out that he had been deported from Canada because of his militant teachings and, you know, recruiting and all this stuff. So this imam's caught like down in San Diego on a trunk of a car. But yet they're saying, oh, they don't think any terrorism's coming through. But you have that. And then on January 27th, this according to Fox News, in the Arizona desert, they find a terrorist manual laying on the ground. An Iranian book celebrating suicide bombers found in Arizona desert. Now, this is by William Lajanus. Well, I don't know. It's a Fox guy. A book celebrating suicide bombers has been found in the Arizona desert just north of the U.S.-Mexican border, authorities tell Fox today. The book, In Memory of Our Martyrs, was spotted Tuesday by a U.S. Border Patrol agent out of the Casa Grande substation who was patrolling a route known for smuggling illegal immigrants and drugs. Published in Iran, it consists of short biographies of Islamic suicide bombers and other Islamic militants who died carrying out attacks. According to international U.S. Customs and Border Protection documents, the book also includes letters from suicide attackers to their families, as well as some of their last wills and testaments. Each biographical page contains the terrorist's name, date of death, and how they died. I can just see Islamic children, instead of trading baseball cards, they're trading martyr cards. You know, and so that's kind of what this book is. Agents also say that the book appears to have been exposed to weather in the desert for at least several days or possibly weeks. That's a little vague brackiness, but it hasn't been out there very long. At this time, DHS, Department of Homeland Security, does not have any credible information on terrorist groups operating along the southwest border. This coupled with the fact that they caught an imam, a militant imam, sneaking in, but no, in the same week. A Department of Homeland Security official said in a statement, "We work closely with our partners in the law enforcement and so-called intelligence communities, and as a matter of due diligence and law enforcement, best practices report anything found, no matter how significant or insignificant it may seem." They're trying to make it sound like this little handbook on, you know, glorifying suicide bombers is no big deal. You know, I'm all for the First Amendment, but, you know, something like this found on the border, and then they're still trying to say that OTMs aren't coming in, Arabs aren't coming in. Statements from U.S. officials, get this, including FBI Director Robert Mueller, Herr Mueller, has raised serious concerns in recent years over other than Mexicans or illegal immigrants, other than Mexicans who have crossed into the United States at alarming rates. Mueller testified before a House Appropriations Committee in March of 2005 that there are individuals from countries with known al-Qaeda connections who are changing their Islamic surnames to Hispanic-sounding names and obtaining false Hispanic identities, learning to speak Spanish, that's what Lou's doing right now, and pretending to be Hispanic. Just last year, the Department of Homeland Security had in custody thousands of detainees, thousands, from Afghanistan, Egypt, Iraq, Iran, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and Yemen. U.S. Border Patrol statistics indicate that there were 108,025 OTMs detained in 2006 compared to 165,000 in 2005. So the number's going, and the number of increase are Arabs. OTMs can be from the Yucatan Peninsula. They can be from South America. So don't think OTM means Arab. It just means other than Mexican. Authorities would not release a picture of the book to Fox News or reveal how long they believed it was lying in the desert. Immigration officials have previously discovered items along the U.S.-Mexico border from Middle East origins, including Iranian currency. They found that in Zapata, Texas. I love it's called Zapata. They just burned that town down. And a jacket found in Jim Hogg County, Texas, that was covered with patches, including an Arabic military badge that illustrates an airplane flying into a tower. And meanwhile, you know, Bush had 8 years to close the border, and he didn't. Obongo's been in there, what's he in now, 2 years, 3 years now? It's hard, I can't keep track. It all seems like a roller coaster ride. They're stopping every project that they were to build any fence. Now they're going to go with drones because they can control the drones. We have no idea what they're really doing. It's just crazy stuff, folks. The border's open. We're inviting them in. Imam's sneaking in the trunks of cars. It's crazy, wild and scary, wacky stuff, and yet the rest of America is fiddling while Rome burns. It seems like an appropriate analogy. I got our friend Brian Hunt with the California Medical Militia Command. I don't know if you're listening, because I've been sending emails trying to verify what you sent me, Brian. But there's an alert that some militia guy got arrested somewhere and picked up and being charged as an enemy combatant. I haven't been able to find a news story on it. I found nothing on the boards. If any of you have, you know, feel free to call in and let me know about it. But I haven't, but I got this alert from him. So while I was looking for that, I typed in militia guy, you know, arrested that. And I found this story, which was funny because we don't have TV here. So it's all stuff that we find on the net. And of all places, where did it go? Oregon, I got to go all the way to the top now. Wound, and this falls into line with the stuff I've been talking about. More and more people have had it with cops, and they're shooting cops. Some of them are walking right into police stations and just lighting it up, you know, doing a Terminator, and others are being pulled over, just had too much, and just lighting up the cops. Well, it happened in Portland, Oregon, about 5 days ago. But this is an update on it, and I didn't know about it when it happened. Doctors say an Oregon police officer ambushed during a traffic stop is recovering from gunshots to his pelvis. Ooh. Obviously, whoever shot him knew he was wearing a vest. That would have killed him if he hadn't managed to call in the shooting to dispatchers, then been rushed to a hospital for surgery. Yeah, you know, okay, sure. One of the bullets fired by a man who's still at large, One of the bullets, fired by a man still at large, severed a major vein. I like how they mix that. Giving 45-year-old Lincoln City officer Stephen Dodds just 15 to 30 minutes to live. He was able to call in, Lincoln City Police Chief Stephen Bouchard said. That's a testament to his endurance. Well, he had his radio on him. He's probably screaming in it. I love how they always try to make heroes out of these guys. He was probably screaming. I'm not going to degrade the guy, but you get what I'm saying. They're really playing up this shooting. Dodds opened his eyes for the first time Thursday and is expected to survive. Doctors at Porton Legacy Emmanuel, I hope it's not Rahm Emmanuel, hospital said. He's a strong guy, and they go all into that. I don't really want to talk about the cop. But what's going on here is authorities are scouring the area for David Anthony Durham, 43, who they believe shot Dodds before leading police on a chase along the coast. Police say he's likely armed and may be holed up in a vacation home in a secluded neighborhood less than a block from the Pacific Ocean. And I don't know anything about, I haven't heard about this. None of you guys have told me about it, so I don't know if you're seeing this. Searchers are focusing on a 3-square-mile strip of land that pokes into the Pacific Ocean. 25 members of the Oregon State Police SWAT team, 25, are patrolling the area around the clock and checking houses. There's a lot of anxiety. Fear is heightened at this time, Lincoln County Sheriff Dennis Dotson said. A security video from a convenience store about 30 minutes before the shooting shows Durham decked head to toe in green camouflage and a dark beret. Family members describe the 43-year-old as an avid outdoorsman who designs his own camouflage clothing and had become delusional after taking, guess what, folks, pain medication for an injured shoulder. Are you seeing some pattern here? Here we go. Okay, who do we have?
Hey, yeah, calling Dutch Jones.
Hello, is this Lane?
No, this isn't Lane. This is Diana.
Oh, okay, Diana. What is up?
Oh, are you on the air?
Yes, ma'am, I am on the air.
Okay. Well, what is up is... Lane Lawless was banned from the courtroom of the Pima County Superior Court today by the presiding judge in the Shauna Ford trial.
Yes, I read that in the paper.
Oh, you saw it in the paper?
Yeah, I read that Lane went covert, tried to go in dressed up, and they found her out and chased her out again. And I love the exchange she had with the judge.
Well, I don't know how much of it is accurate. They're not exactly interested in truth down there.
No, they're not.
But let me give you a little summary to help put all this together. On day one, when Wallace showed up at the courtroom, there was some kind of, commotion because the prosecutor didn't know if she was a witness or not. But that's okay. We'll let that pass.
Sure.
So she was asked to leave the courtroom. However, on day two of the trial, it was reported on some of the blogs how a mystery witness showed up in the courtroom after lunch, and the defense attorney for Shauna Ford jumped up and objected and said, "I don't know who this witness is." Okay? Who is? I haven't even questioned them. I haven't interviewed them.
So how can they be a witness?
The judge kind of went along with that. However, the mystery witness was allowed to take the stand and testify. Do you believe that?
Yeah.
No, we were kind of suspecting when they said they didn't want Lane in there. Our first thought was, well, then who are they going to let in there? And now we know. Anybody can pop up as a mystery witness. Do you believe that?
And just testify without being vetted.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then today's incident where she was banned from the courthouse and told she is not to speak to Shauna Ford or any member of the media. Now, can you help explain that one to me?
It's a huge violation of First Amendment rights. I like when Lane stood up and said, "Well, is this a gag order?" And the judge says, "You can call it whatever you want." Well, no, you're the judge. You're issuing it. You have to define it. You just can't ambiguously throw out a decree. I mean, that's just tyranny right there.
Yeah.
That's tyranny right there.
It really is. So you said it's in the paper tonight? Which paper?
Oh, I put it, let me see here. I put it on my, it was a local paper or maybe even just a blog. Let me see if I can find it.
Oh, yeah, it's probably Kim Smith.
Let's see. I got to find it. I've got it all set up.
Covering it.
Okay, let's see. It's on ArizonaStarNet.com.
Yeah.
AZSTARNET.com. It's on our Facebook page. It's about the third thing down.
Okay.
I had to get that out there because I could not believe that a judge would make a decree like that. Oh, no, I'm saying you can't talk to anybody. Are you saying it's a gag order? Well, no, that's not what I'm saying. Well, you just did.
Yeah. And what about this? Well, I guess he just lifted her witness status, didn't he?
Yeah.
And she's banned from the courthouse, so she's a non-witness status.
Well, now if she gets subpoenaed, she can say, I can't go in there, I'm banned.
There you go.
These are conflicting decrees from some tyrant in a black robe, dressed as a woman on a bench.
Yeah, really. But anyways, I want to give you a couple of inside points. And it came from the hearing yesterday.
Okay.
There was some incredulous, incredulous testimony given by Gina Gonzalez.
Oh, yeah, I read that.
Well, no, you didn't read the real good stuff. Something in there. I mean, after all, she was on the witness stand. But the incredulous stuff she testified to was shocking. It was absolutely shocking. And you're not going to read about this. And if you try to get a transcript, it's not that easy.
Yeah.
Can I disclose to
your
listeners what
share
she had?
Share it with the Stronghold Radio audience. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, she was on cross-examination by Shauna Ford's attorney, Eric Larson. And it seems like everything he asked her, he would say, well, was it black or white? No, it was yellow. It was always something other than what he was offering her in these a string of questions, shall we say. And what he was doing was reading her comments from depositions, transcripts that came from actual recordings, detectives' recordings.
Yeah.
And after they transcribed what she said out of court, and there were even statements she had made earlier in court, she signed them off. So he walked up to her to the witness stand, showed her, he says, this is a transcript. Read it. You said this. And she looks at it, and she said, I never said this. I never saw this transcript. Said, do you see your signature here? She said, yes. He said, is that your signature? She said, yes. He said, you signed off? Did you read it? And that you said this.
Well, it sounds like the lawyer's actually doing some lawyering.
Well, yeah, he was. Most of her testimony went like that. Sitting there in the courtroom, the impression one would get was she was relaying the unspoken message that there's something going on here. You people aren't, in other words, her whole behavior was, this isn't true. That didn't happen. I didn't say this.
I wasn't there. I don't know what I was.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, when it came to the part she had to describe the woman that was in her house, that's where it just went off the curve.
Yeah.
It went something like this. Well, the woman entered her house and had short, brown, curly hair. Every light was on in her house. She looked right at her face. She knew she was wearing a wig. She knew she didn't have makeup on. She didn't know what color her eyes were, but she was wearing desert camouflage.
Right.
The last thing she remembered, the woman said, quick, we have to get out of here. Someone's coming. And five Mexican-speaking intruders flee with this woman.
Yeah.
3 minutes later, the woman returns.
Yeah.
Dressed as a border guard in a border patrol uniform and a long brown-yellow ponytail.
Okay. It sounds just bizarre. And, of course, what did the media print? Oh, 9-year-old girl begged for her life while gunman reloaded his weapon and pointed the weapon at her and blew her away. That's all I could find in the media today. Nothing on what you just shared with us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, and that's why it's so important to have people sitting in there and paying attention to these details. He went over how many times she had spoken to detectives in the past 2 years. She even denied ever looking at a lineup. She denied that she ever looked at a lineup, that she ever saw any pictures of anybody. And he said, here, you picked out three different women. Here's your signature. Like that.
Well, maybe there's a glimmer of hope then for our warrior.
Oh, there is lots of hope. You just have to be in the courtroom and hear this testimony.
Pray for the jurors.
The witness they put up there was a next-door neighbor. And the next-door neighbor made it perfectly clear that Mr. Albert Gaxiola, who's also a defendant in this case, had a penchant for blondes. He had them all over his house. And when they showed a picture of one of his girlfriends, she's a blonde who looks a lot like Shauna. Now, what do you think about that?
Yeah, there's... And remember, all Shauna needs is a shadow of a doubt in a capital case. All she needs is one juror to be nullified and say, I will judge the facts in this case and the Constitution, not the judge's orders. That's what we got to be praying for, people. That this stuff that Mary's telling us about right now is sinking into it. Just one juror. Just one.
Well,
but hopefully all of them.
For a shadow of doubt, Dutch, we would have to say that Gina Gonzalez delivered a truckload yesterday.
It sure sounds like it from what I was reading.
Anyway.
But the media swallowed every shovelful of that BS from the articles I found. They swallowed it and loved it and asked for more.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Mary. I appreciate you calling in.
Diana.
Why did I think your name was Mary?
I don't know.
I wrote down Mary. Okay, Diana, and if you have contact with Lane, let her know that we appreciate her gumption in what she did today. And anybody who has connections to this case is free to call at any time. The line is open. Thank you, Diana.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, folks, let's turn that down. I got to turn this off. Push over here. We're going to go to a break right now. As you guys know, when stuff pops up, I'm going to do it first, but we'll get back to our whatever it was we were talking about. In a minute here. Go ahead, Lou. I'm waiting on you. Here we go. We'll be right back.
Now here's a song for all of you liberals who believe your ways are best, who don't mind overcrowding this nation, immigrants, who don't care about the population, don't care if it's about
it. It is time to organize. It's a time of war, and it's time to revolt, and it's your time to show we are a people of a struggle. Hasta San Diego.
We got crime overtaking our cities. We got gangs taking over our streets. We keep handing out more and more welfare, though it never seems to meet their needs. What kind of culture are we cultivating? One where you never have to pull any weeds. If we don't stop this immigration, this great nation's gonna fall. Let's get a grip on immigration in this great United States.
You have to force that with us.
It's high time we remember.
We couldn't stop you. Too many blue-eyed.
We are rapidly becoming another third world fascist state. Let's get a grip on immigration in these great United States. How can ever come to any solution?
We're going to take over all the political institutions of California. In 5 years, the Hispanics are going to be the majority population of the state.
You also made the statement that California is going to become a Hispanic state, and that if anyone doesn't like it, they should leave. Did you say that?
I did. They ought to go back to Europe.
And get a grip on immigration. Now you know it's not too late. Let's get a grip on immigration in these great United States.
get a grip on immigration in these great United States. And quit trying to fan the flame that I'm a racist. And quit trying to fabricate that I hate. And get a grip on immigration in these great
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info. They got their package. I'm going back on the air. What do you want me to ask, Stace? Hellbilly 311, we want to know if you got your package. Lou, leave the knobs alone. This is the Dutch Jones Show, and we're back. Diane, thank you for listening and calling in. I love being part of an official gag order in a court case, and it just blows my mind. It blows my mind. Anyway, we're back. This is the Dutch Jones radio program, and we're bringing you the militant Christian separatist worldview. My intro is getting longer. Make sure you stick around, because the good stuff starts at 6 when we switch over to Liberty Tree Radio. Not that this stuff isn't good, but the real meat and potato stuff, where I let the big boys take the mic and I just facilitate with Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell, and we are expecting a call from Pastor Thomas McConnell, the man when I was a teenager he used to chase me down and beat me up. In Fort Collins, Colorado, is now going to be a guest on my Christian radio talk show. You tell me that God doesn't have a sense of humor, and I'm going to poke you in the eye. Because it's just weird the way things lead out. And Olima, I don't know if I can... Is it okay, Olima, if I tell the story that you shared with me about the way God does strange things and the way we're interweaved? I'll wait for you to give me an approval in the chat room here before I do that, because it was sent in an email. I'm reading something else that came in here. Kicked off anything yet, Paul? Okay, here we go. Let me look to see in there. I don't see Olima commenting. She may have walked away, so I'll save that story. But it's a great story of just the intertwining of God's children and their lives. And it's interesting. It's just the weird coincidence. Okay, thank you. I just won't mention where you're from. Okay, Olima. Olima was in a grocery store somewhere in the middle of Nebraska today, and or yesterday. And she was wearing a modestly made dress, like kind of like that the women up at our church wear, and with a bonnet and all that kind of stuff. And the person behind her said, "You know, that's a great looking dress. That looks like something my sister-in-law would have." And this lady's name was Mary, talking to Olima. And then she took out her phone and showed a picture of somebody, and it turns out it was our pastor's wife, Jill Campbell, and this lady ends up being Jill's sister-in-law. She's married to Jill's brother, Rick. And what a small world it is. And it was just bizarre, you know, that she would see that and then comment on the dress. And, you know, and hopefully, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know much about Mary and Rick. They come and visit quite a bit, but they're so far away, as you know, because they're in your area, Olima, out there in the middle of Nebraska. Or was it Kansas? I can't remember. But it might be nice, you know, they seem to get it right. So next time they're up here, I can't wait to talk to them and say, "What are you doing sneaking up on my listeners in grocery stores and showing them pictures? You know, you know you're not supposed to do that." And then, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's awesome. I love stuff like that. You know, when you find people on Facebook, big deal. But when you just randomly run into somebody who knows something, you know, it goes to the Kevin Bacon 7 degrees of separation. there's only 7 degrees of separation between any two people in the whole world. And every time I think that's not true, you hear about something like this, you know, and it's wonderful. Let's see. Fellow Christians, wide awake to what's happening to this country, beginning to prepare for hard times. I like your point of view, and I'm finding you informative and motivating. That's from General Carver. Are you normally a pod person? Are you usually somebody, or is this your first time listening, General? So either way, welcome or welcome back if you're a pod person, or this is the first time you just got in. It's not you, Lou, is it? You're not like pulling my leg over there on your computer, are you? Okay, good. Make sure, because I could just see you doing that, making me think I got new listeners and trying to boost my ego. Before we went to the story of the Shauna Ford case when Diana called in, we were talking about police shootings in America, specifically this one going up in Oregon, and they're hunting down this guy up there and his brother's, you know, this what's the guy's name? I was looking at his picture here. Where'd his picture go? They took it down. It was in the article before. Now it's gone. Anyway, this individual got into a shootout. David Anthony Durham, 43, a good old boy, had his own form of camouflage. He's running around the mountains up there. It's been going on for 5 days, and I hadn't heard about it. Police issued a warrant on Tuesday for Durham on charges that include attempted aggravated murder for shooting a cop in the groin. The attack came after Dodge pulled over a 1984 Dodge truck driven by a man police believed to be Durham on a coastal highway. Police used a spike strip to stop the truck, and a short time later, he fled into the woods. I guess those patrolmen aren't that good up there, but the dense forest is a great place to end your car chase if you're being chased. Durham's brother, Michael, told the Associated Press that his family feels terrible about what happened to the Dodge family, and they wish him full recovery. Because the cop's still alive. It sounds like this person, Durham, knew what was going on. He shot below the vest. And the funny thing is, get this, they're not releasing the dash cam video. So we're not going to see what interaction in just the initial traffic stop triggered this. We don't know if this cop's a good cop, bad cop, New World Order Nazi or not. We don't know that, so I'm not going to judge in that yet. We don't know if he was shot with his own gun, if he got pushy, if he got bossy, if you know. But they're blaming this on medications, and that was the point I was making when Diane called in. We're going to see this pattern again and again and again where drugs are playing a role. You're getting into the Loeffner case deeper and deeper and deeper, and I've been reading about all the times he's had contact with police since he was a teenager. This guy's made claims about being stuck with needles, brainwashing, all this stuff his whole life. And I'm not saying that's the case in this Durham thing. This sounds the way it looks, first blush, which is what we got to take it at now because that's all the information I have. This is just a good old boy, maybe a redneck, and he's running around the hills right now scared to death, and it could be because of the pain meds. Now, I've had friends that have had knee surgery, shoulder surgeries, taken meds, and they've done some pretty ridiculous things. None of them have shot a cop or anybody, but it's a possibility here. So don't think I'm buying into, you know, every time you take a pill, you're going to go nuts. But be thinking about that. They have to keep this pressure up to get the anti-gun lobby some ammo, no pun intended. The Florida shootings, the two cops dead there, the stuff that happened last year with the cops in the donut shop, it's not getting them the returned effect because we're fighting back. It's not getting what they want out of it, so it's going to get more violent, more nasty, and they're going to have to impose, at first, maybe even just regional gun control stuff, because national stuff's going to be hard to swallow, especially in a let's face it, as soon as Obongo did the State of the Onion, it became election season. So in election season, the Democrats are going to back off gun control. But they're going to try and make a case for it. If he gets his second term, if Obongo gets a second term, I can guarantee you the next 4 years after that will be hell on earth for freedom-loving people. Because he's not going to care anymore. He's just going to mandate, executive order, veto, do whatever he can to get what he needs. Because China's still mad at him. Remember the little visit from President Hu? You know, Obongo hears a who. He went into the office and, hey, I can't do a good Chinese accent anymore. You people, they still have gun. Why'd they have gun? You stupid. I told you. We give you $3 trillion. You get rid of gun. So everything's starting to come into place now. The foreign trade zones, the crime being cranked up, unemployment going up. I talked yesterday about the dollar being weak, our bond rating being in the dirt. The manipulation for the destruction of America is moving along like a steam locomotive, and America better get ready for it. But here's the problem. And I'm seeing this every day because this is my ministry. Hey, who's Pat? I'm getting a message from Pat. Oh, hello, Pat. Thanks for listening. I got an IM there. I I see the bigger problem being the refugees right now. The people out there, the atheists, the people that belong to these little different sects or cults, if you will, that have their own agendas, that are not with us. And I hate it when people get mad at me for this, but if you're not with the Christian liberty movement, then you're against the Christian liberty movement. It's as plain and simple as that. Whether your intentions are good or not, if you're not part of the solution in America, you are part of the problem. And there are more parts of the problem than there are parts of the solution right now. We've got good leaders rising up. We've got great men trying to rally the troops right now. You've got little dweebs like me trying to share the training and getting people. Every day I run into one or two people every single day, I would say an average of two people, that are like, "Oh my God, what do I do? I just stumbled upon your YouTube page. I just stumbled upon, oh, what do I do?" So I calm them down and I say, "Here, go to these websites, learn these things, pray, find a church. If you don't have a church, make a church. You know, do whatever you can do, but be Coram Deo, be in the face of God. Be like Gustavus Adolfo. You know, do everything God first and you will be victorious. And you may die on the battlefield like Gustavus did, but you're going to die serving God and for the better cause of liberty." And that's just the mindset you have to have. You've got to be like Lee and you've got to be like Stonewall. And even in the face of defeat, you still have to thank the Lord above that He chose you to be a servant here on earth. And once you have that mindset, the fear fades away. The fear just trickles away and goes away. I got a question in the chat room. General Carver asks, "On the foreign trade zones, what will be in them? Retail and commercial or just manufacturing? I have seen a mixture of everything you can imagine. The one that is near us has pumps for dairy farms. Now, as dairy farms are being closed here by code compliance and EPA and the price controls of milk, they're shipping these dairies overseas somewhere. I don't know where they're going. I heard Portugal and Spain, but I don't know. They're going to need the equipment, so the brand new equipment's being manufactured. They shut them down here, and then they start producing milk elsewhere. I have seen food storage. The one that is closest to us is food storage. The next farthest one away is bulk materials, everything that Walmart would sell or distribute, but it's not for Walmart. It goes, it's just everywhere. And I'm trying to think. I haven't seen any major manufacturing yet. If any of you guys are doing your, because I've had three or four people come and say, you know, "Hey, we're checking them out. I need to know." That's a great question. What are they doing with these? What is this? Go away. I just got a sexual proposal on my IM. That's kind of weird. Let me see. I got to get rid of this person.
What?
Yeah. Okay. Let me. If you're listening to the show, I need you to go find a handgun and shoot yourself in the head, lady. I'm a Christian man. I don't do that kind of stuff. Let me see here. Unfriend. Boom. Here we go. Remove. You are hereby blocked. You are no longer allowed to be part of our program.
Who is that?
I don't know. That's that person, but now they're gone. Okay, but sorry about that, guys. I don't like that kind of thing on the internet, and I fight it whenever I get it. You're no longer, so I had to block them so they couldn't be here. We need to know what they're doing. We need to know how many rail lines going in and out, all that kind of stuff. So that's an excellent question. Where'd you go here? Now I got to find you. Let's see. I got to close this. Let me close this. Okay, good. Now it's saying, so in short, they really are constructed to take more wealth out of our domestic economy. That's what I believe, because especially the ones in Idaho that are being reported are going to be peopled by Chinese nationals. When Obongo said in his speech, "I want Chinese big screen TVs made in America here to bring American jobs here." But the fact of it is, they're also not telling you they're going to bring the Chinese over to build them. It's like when Toyota came and built a plant here in America. There's one in Southern California, a Toyota plant. You go into it, and it's mostly Asians. They do hire Americans, but it's mostly Asians. And how good has that whole Toyota thing been working out? What was it, like 17 million cars recalled right now? Plants, you know, layoffs, loss of capital. They continue to do these experiments at your expense. And it was like, who was it? I can't remember. I think it was Colby. Somebody, one of our listeners said, who's a pod person, said, "Is this supposed to be good for the economy?" And I said, "Certainly it is, the Chinese economy." And that's exactly what he was getting at. This is going to be great for foreign economies. This is another. This is NAFTA and GATT injected with steroids, and just pumped up to its worst possible scenario. Another way, they're not, because they can say, we don't outsource them. The factories are here. These foreign trade zones are here in America, and we hire American janitors and cafeteria workers. We hire Americans to clean our streets and our chained off, gated community for our Chinese nationals. We allow truck drivers from America to deliver food to our own grocery store that only we're allowed to go to, because that's what's happening in Idaho, folks. And guess what? I did check. Every single governor signed this foreign trade zone agreement. That's right. Idaho, Montana, they all signed it. All 50 governors. I can't believe the Montana governor did, or Idaho. I don't know what they were thinking. Maybe there was some arm twisting. Maybe, you know, the small print was so small these guys couldn't see it. But I don't think that the free states that I like, you know, the non-hippie states, would do this on purpose. So I'm going to give them a little bit. Let's see how they react to it. Let's see what because Montana's basically saying they're going to kick any federal property out anyway when the time comes, and that would include these free trade zones. So maybe it's a plan, get the infrastructure put in and they can seize it. You know, I'm not privy to the plans of the leaders of this movement. I'm so far down on the chain of command, I'd probably be the last notified when the revolution starts. I'll get on here and you guys go, hey, did you hear about the revolution? I'll be like, what revolution? Yeah, there was another Lexington and Concord in Decatur, Illinois, you know, or something. And I'll be like, really? I didn't hear about it. All I deal with is our own little group here, and I try to bring it all together. So you guys are my eyes and ears out there when you think about it. I'm just a hub. I'm just a bucket of knowledge that you guys got to put stuff in, and then I can share it. And what I need you to do is, yeah, go to these locations, and like the general asked here, General Carver, find out what they're doing. What's the purpose of these structures? You know, and if you're a businessman or a businesswoman, maybe ask to have a meeting to see what you can do to integrate your business. You know, do some undercover work. And that would be great. And it would be awesome if we could get some pictures and things like that. I've got people checking out all the ones here within about a 70-mile radius from the different militias that I've notified. And I just don't think any... You know, some things I get, about 90% of what I get is harmless. The intel I get is harmless. And I go, yeah, okay, that's cool, you know, fine. You know, and unless, you know, it's potentially bad, but right now it's harmless. You know, like the little camps and stuff we see, and we get all, as long as we know where they are. But a federal trade zone is a direct attack on our national sovereignty. A federal trade zone is pure evidence of us selling out, the government selling us out. A pure sign of justification to bring the current government down and bring them down, then up. Bring them up on charges of treason. While Hitler is running around the world trying to manipulate countries into global war, you know, what about everybody worried about global warming? Global war is on the horizon. And it's not like everybody, you know, them against us, but if every nation is in a state of chaos, that's global war. There don't have to be battle lines anymore. It's asymmetrical warfare. And then if they got to destroy the economy here. It's hanging on by threads. And don't pay attention to the stock market. That's falsely inflated by printing money and pumping into it. And they're going to keep doing those bailouts and pumping more money into it, and there's no accountability. It's all a joke. The real stuff is we're not making widgets anymore. People aren't working. More and more people are just giving up. And more jobs are leaving. More and more jobs. And the people you voted in, all you people that go, ooh, we had a big Tea Party revolution. Yee! It did. I told you, I said 6 months. It's not even been that long. And November, December, January, 3 months. We're in the middle of, we're towards the end of January right now as I look at my little calendar that Debbie gave us. Thank you again, Debbie. They're already showing to have no backbone. You know? I'm not excited about anything that's going on in Washington, D.C. In a positive way. There's three or four people that I go, yeah, stick it to them, yay, but three or four people does not a movement make. And all those Tea Party people that got voted in, I told you what was going to happen. Once they get there and see that everything's rusted shut and their little bit of anger is not going to be enough, they're just not going to be able to do it. And I continue to do what I do here only because I know that the solution is not trying to work within the system anymore. And of course, the pastor and I will differ on this. Pastor Warren Mark Campbell, who will be here in just a few minutes. I'm focusing more, and I'm not here to tear down the government. It's going to do it itself. So all you feds listening to the replays, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying when you guys screwed up so bad that it falls apart, we have to have a solution. We have to have an answer. We have to have documents. We have to have a government in place. When the American Revolution took place, they didn't just say, okay, let's throw the king overboard and kill all of his troops. Okay, now what do we do? Before they even did it, they had constitutions. When they declared the Declaration of Independence and passed it around, the first thing the delegates did is went back to their states and wrote constitutions. There has to be another form of government to follow it. There has to be a system, a code of law. And of course, because we're Christian separatist militants, our code of law is going to be God's law, written on the heart of men. If you listen on Tuesdays, you know what I'm talking about. I'm excited. I'm not scared. I'm not afraid. I'm exuberant. Please call the dog over. He's chewing on our cables. He's going to electrocute himself. If he chews too hard, I'll have to stomp on him, and I don't want that noise going out over the air. That dog is the biggest wimp. He squeals like a stuck pig. If you just look at him funny, he's a big baby. I don't know. Maybe I'm trying to get you guys ready for the next hour subconsciously. There's solutions out there. There's no need to panic. The only thing we need to be worried about is where we're standing when this thing sets off. I don't want to be in the middle of Disneyland when it starts. I don't want to be in the middle of La Habra, you know, or I don't know any other communities, you know, the middle of Denver. You know, I'd rather be out in the middle of nowhere naked than in the middle of Denver with all my gear, or the middle of L.A. with all my gear when this thing sets off. And what will happen if the Chinese do foreclose on America, Olima's asking. Well, what I see happening, and I'm by no means a financial expert, my background's in history, anthropology, and law, as far as applying the law, not making the law, criminal justice. I think what the Chinese will do is they'll start asking for concessions. They've already got the Panama Canal, and I still think that's why we gave it up back then, under Carter. They'll start asking for the ports, which they control already through leases. Then they'll start asking for infrastructure like railroads, the rights to lumber, the rights to natural gas and oil reserves that we hold, like Alaska. I'm not too sure, but as last checked, I think we share some common borders with Russia on islands that China has disputes over. They may ask for reconciliation on those for deep sea oil drilling. They're going to ask for collateral. What's a loan shark do when he comes? If you can't pay, he breaks your legs or he takes something of value. So that's their options. They can come and break our legs. They can invade by force. Or they can come into our house and see what they want and take it. Loan sharking is loan sharking. Whether it's a guy named Luigi or a guy named Lee Pond, it doesn't matter. They're going to demand collateral for what they're doing. And depending on how our government is structured at the time, because I think it's a paper tiger right now, I really do, and glass house, they will either resist and get slapped around. Because think about it. How many wars have we fought since 1945, or since 1953 against a real military? You can argue Vietnam had the Chinese in it, but really they were, you know, it was a mixture. It's going to be like Korea. It's going to be fought either to a standstill unless either side is willing to go ruthless. And there will be chunks of America carved out, there will be treaties signed, and we'll be stuck, some of our loved ones, behind enemy lines. That's what I foresee. I'm not a prophet. I'm just telling you, given history, how things work. Borders move when nations argue over assets. War is always about resources first, ideology second. And also, as the economy decays and the federal government weakens, do you think the free states will demonstrate the necessary leadership to preserve a constitutional governance? That is General Carver's question, and yes. That, I think, is the last great hope. I think there's going to be a glob of states here in the Pacific Northwest that will reform under the name of Jefferson or whatever. You're going to have smaller states within, smaller regions within it that will be like the all-white state. There's that group that wants to do that. But you're going to see clusters. You're going to see Montana be one big country. You're going to see Texas probably. And then there'll be ones we didn't even imagine. There'll be like the Ohio, Wisconsin, Illinois, greater tri, you know, they'll come up with some new name. They'll probably name it Lincoln, which I hope they don't. But as states are doing that now and setting the example, I think they're paving the way for it. It's going to be kind of like when Europe entered the Dark Ages and the greater empires previous to that fell apart. There's going to be little fiefdoms, kingdoms, you know, that kind of thing going on. But because we have more of a better view of history now, I think they'll decide to be stronger. They'll be bigger, broader. There's enough oil in Montana, North Dakota, and South Dakota that they don't have to worry about anything at all. California is going to be a mess. It's going to shatter into probably 17 different regions based on, you know, different philosophical things. The reason I'm in the mountains is because I think that's going to be one solid one of a group of people, and we may have to fall back. I don't know, but we'll continue our forward operating post here as long as we can. But we have plans to fall back north if we have to. But we need the ports. We need the farmland. It's about resources. The ideologies, you know, Christian, liberty, all that, when the shooting starts, it'll come back to resources and populations that can be used for workforces. The Chinese will look at us as slaves, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's kind of how I'm predicting it's going to go. But that was an excellent question. And as we're wrapping down, we're going to get ready here after the top of the hour. We're going to be over on Liberty Tree Radio. So Stronghold Radio is going to link up with Liberty Tree Radio. And we're going to be doing our Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell. So thanks for tuning in. Remember to hit the page, DutchJones.info. You'll see a little chip in thing there. If you like what we're doing, make a donation. $5 donation. That's all you can do. That's fine. And our post office box is there if you want to send it that way, if you don't like using credit cards. We'll be back after the top of the hour with Practical Christianity.
We're all indentured servitudal slaves, overburdened and bewildered feudal knaves, who have lost our soul posterity through ignorance and apathy, and now we're being taxed out of our graves. And as long as we stay passive, we'll succumb, contented with some socialistic crumb. Well, the naked truth and fact is we're all saps who pay our taxes, and that is why the banksters keep us dumb. Could the state of our condition be the product of omission, what we didn't learn in public schools? And did our fathers all through history all fight and die for liberty so we could play the tyrant's fools? And can you call it education when it's all indoctrination to obey the hidden powers that be? Did we fight the revolution? Did we win the world wars just to slumber into slavery? We're all indentured servitudal slaves, overburdened and bewildered feudal knaves, who have lost our soul posterity through ignorance and apathy, and now we're being taxed out of our graves. And as long as we stay passive, we'll succumb, contented with some humanistic crumb. Well, the naked truth and fact is we're all saps who pay those taxes, and that is why the banksters keep us dumb. While Franklin and Eleanor were telling us they hated war, they made a deal behind our backs. They said the bankers could enslave us for a portion of our wages, and today we call it income tax. But what they failed then to tell us was the way they planned to sell us into statutory slavery. Now it's called constructive fraud. Some even claim the wrath of God. I call it social insecurity. Let's stop being indentured servitudal slaves, overburdened and bewildered feudal knaves, and reclaim our lost posterity. Rise up and proclaim liberty. It's high time we rock the boat and make some waves. 'Cause as long as we stay passive, we'll succumb. They'll starve us on their communistic crumb. And the naked truth and fact is we don't have to pay those taxes. Yes, it's time we show those banksters, those international gangsters. So let's turn the tables and spoil all their fun.
That's all.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info. Well, folks, ladies and gentlemen, friends listening on other networks, this is Stronghold Radio coming to you from the church at Cahuilla here in Central California, where I like to say the belly button right by Sequoia National Park, where we like to bring you the Christian militant worldview, a different worldview than you'll get from TBN or anywhere else. And it is Thursday, so that means only one thing. It's time for Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell. Are you there?
Good evening, Dutch, and welcome to all the listeners.
Great. Thank you. And what did you want to talk about tonight, sir?
Well, I've been hearing the good reports that folks are interested about this concept called community and Christian community. And so, Dutch, I'd like to take one more week and maybe tie up some loose ends and give some random thoughts about this whole concept of Christian community.
Sure.
And the importance of it. And then we'll just kind of go from there, and maybe some listeners will have a question or two they might want to call in or email. But this whole concept of, after being approximately 15 years very involved in the Christian Patriot Movement, I came to the conclusion, and the movement to restore America to a godly constitutional republic again, after about 10 years I began to realize, in my view, in my research and my thinking, that it's going to have to be done one community at a time.
Right.
And so that's what we've been encouraging folks to do and you know, considering. And so we're just going to, there'll be maybe a little bit of review if you've heard the other two lessons that we've given the last 2 weeks, but there's going to be some new material as well. And I want people to understand that they need to, as William Bradford said in his book, The Plymouth Plantation, mm-hmm. that the separatists,
right.
that they shook off the yoke of anti-Christian bondage, and as the Lord's free people, they join themselves by a covenant of the Lord into a church estate in the fellowship of the gospel to walk in all his ways made known or be made known unto them according to their best endeavors, whatsoever it should cost them, the Lord assisting them. All right? And so this is what I want to talk about, is that Christians need to begin to shake off this yoke of anti-Christian bondage. And one of the ways we can do that is by forming communities where we really have a say, where our vote really counts, because it only takes a few votes to make a difference.
The patterns worked before. Rather than trying to do a top-down restructuring of the way things are going, it's better to have, and I hate to use this term, but grassroots and grow up.
Right, and you know, we see that, you hear me often say that when it comes to the presidential elections, it's actually more important who is sheriff of a local county mm-hmm. than who is president of the United States, because the sheriff of the local county has the authority to stop the federal government at the county borderline. And so taking that illustration, we could even say perhaps it's more important in a local community who is elected to the community board or the mayor of a community, if it's minded like we with this type of a concept in mind, to press the crown rights and King Jesus into every area of life. And so the local level, the strongest link in the chain of civil government is at the local level.
Amen.
And we so often get all excited about the national election, who's going to be, you know, president and vice president, that we forget that we should be getting involved locally.
Yeah.
Now, like in a community like ours, there really isn't any local politics. There's a board that takes care of septic and water, and that's about all they do, all right?
Yeah.
So our governance comes from the county. But
because of that void of leadership that you've spoken
because
about.
Because the void of leadership at the community level.
There isn't one, so the county steps
in. Exactly, so the county steps in.
Right.
If the county doesn't step in, then it's going to follow somewhere else and
state,
you know, go on down state and then federal. But our founding fathers, I think of de Tocqueville in his Democracy in America, he came to see the greatness of America, and he said, I nowhere see the federal power. In other words, the federal government, he couldn't see it in operation because it wasn't bothering people. It wasn't molesting them
Not
like
a hindrance.
It does today. It wasn't a hindrance to the free exercise of their liberties. And we find ourselves always coming up against a federal rule or regulation here. If it's not the Department of Fish and Game, it's the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. If it's not the Environmental Protection Agency, it's some national park or wildlife proposed wetlands refuge, or on and on and on and on with the government agencies.
Layer after layer.
Layer after layer. And they shouldn't be touching our lives. What should be touching our lives is where we're at in a local community, and then at times maybe the county. And very little touch of the state as well.
Right.
You know. Right. But lastly, the federal government, which seems to be consuming so much of our time. So I think after years we're beginning to learn that community is the way to go. And Webster defines community, let me give that to you once again, as a society of people. This is his 1828 dictionary. A society of people having common rights and privileges or common interests, civil, political, or ecclesiastical, or living under the same laws and regulations.
Pretty
and
clear.
And so there's a lot, there's really a lot there to it. And what I wanted to do tonight now is give you some concept of things for people to consider, because you mentioned that there's a lot of interest drummed up by these last two.
It's the bulk of what I'm getting email about.
Okay, yeah. And on some of the other stations that are carrying the Practical Christianity, they're interested in this concept of community as well. So what would you look for in a community? So let's just talk about some of those concepts, and maybe we can, you know, hammer it back and forth a little bit. One of the best things a person could do is if they had the ability to purchase a couple hundred acres, divide it up, and just start a community from scratch.
Right from the ground up.
Right from the ground up. That's the easiest way. It's like many people who have tried to remodel a Victorian house that would have been cheaper just to start from scratch.
Yeah.
You know. And but of course, how many of us, not very many of us, have the ability to purchase 200 acres somewhere and, you know, get the roads and the septic and all that go in and then divide it up.
Infrastructure. Right.
You know, it takes a lot of money. So it's ideal. It might not happen. But what could we look for in a town or moving into a town where we can live in it? First of all, it would have to be a town that has maybe 200 to 500 people in it, if you're looking at it for an existing town. We're kind of going down the line here. First of all, if a person could get bare land and divide it up, that'd be the best way to go. But since most of us can't afford to do that, if you have a town that maybe has 200 to 500, you can't go into a town of 10,000 people or 5,000 people and expect two or three families to have any significant sway or vote. And that's the whole problem that we have now. Mm-hmm. We've got people voting. I vote in every election, but my vote is, you know, goes up against the thousands that are in our county, and then the multiple thousand, millions in the state of California, and then on as that breaks down. So you would want a community, look for a community that has a small enough population where five or six families really could hold significant impact.
Sway.
Could have sway, because we've learned historically that it's just a small percentage that either controls it for good or for evil.
Yeah,
that's true. Or a county, or a state, or a nation. So look for a town that is small. Another practical thing would be to look for a town that doesn't have a lot of rules and regulations.
Covenants.
So for instance, here in California, you would not want to try and make changes in the city of Santa Barbara, for instance, they direct people on what color of house they can paint.
Sure.
You
what
know,
plants
can
they can have during what times of year. It's ridiculous in these cities here.
So you wouldn't want to go to a place like that where you can live. And that's where people that are caught up in the cities, I'm encouraging them to say, get out of there. You're not leavening. You're not doing much light there. You're really not, unless you feel directly that God has called you to be there. There's not much that that we can do.
Sure.
So you want a county or a town that allows some freedom of growth and where you can build things and do things without a terrible amount of restrictions. For instance, there are still counties in the United States where you don't have to have a building permit to build a building.
Right.
For instance, I believe the last I had heard in Nevada, I believe it's Nye County, Nevada, you still didn't need a building permit.
Yeah.
There's a county in Idaho today. I think there's one county left in the state of Idaho. Still don't need a building permit. They have to have a building permit to run electrical. You get your electrical run to the pole. That's done by a professional. But then after you get your electrical to your pole and your box, you take it from there.
Sure.
There are counties in rural Tennessee and other places where you have a lot of freedom.
Little islands of liberty.
Yeah, little islands where you could basically... Well, the reason why we're talking about this is so that people can build on a shoestring, and they don't have to go into debt.
Yeah.
So we don't want to be people going into big debts.
Yeah.
So a place where property taxes are not real high is another thing to look for, so you don't have to have that burden of property taxation.
Sure.
And, of course, we're talking about ultimately eliminating property taxation altogether.
Yeah, there wouldn't be one in an ideal society.
In an ideal Christian setting.
Yeah.
But these are things to look for. You might look for weather could be a factor. I don't think it would be great to try and plan a community where it's super cold and snow 6 or 7 months out of the year.
Yeah, now, your growing time is limited and resources
exactly.
Required to heat and keep alive is going to take up most of your time.
Just surviving those harsh winters could take up a lot of time. So not that you can't do it. And then Holland, Michigan is a good example of people that way back left left the country of Amsterdam to found Holland, Michigan. And they had to do it under difficult, terrible winter circumstances. So it can be done. I'm just trying to give some ideal things.
Yeah, why not look for the best resource, best possible
Exactly.
Combination of things.
So weather could be a factor. Let me just say here, too, reasons why people move. You know, we mentioned this on a preceding broadcast, but I never brought it out quite this way. People move all the time. We meet people, they move because their job takes them somewhere. So they move across country because the job is there. I've seen people move because they want to get closer to a lake because they enjoy water skiing.
Leisure. They move for schools all the time.
I've seen people move for schools because they figure that this particular public school is going to give a better thing for their child, better education. People move. I've seen people move because their children are perhaps an Olympic hopeful, and they move to a gymnastics coach where a gymnastics coach is, or a swim coach is.
Yeah, facilities. Mm-hmm. Big Bear, California. People moved to Big Bear, California for figure skating because they had a coach in Big Bear and an arena there, and that's where like all Yamaguchi and all them were. And it was bizarre that I knew people that were moving there, but their kids never had a chance.
Yeah.
And you try to tell them that,
So people, we're all used to this. All our listeners, know people that move for various reasons. You move for health reasons.
Yeah.
Arid climates are better for people sometimes with the allergy issues and so forth. So you move for health reasons. But when you begin to talk about moving for a Christian community or moving because of where a church is located, all of a sudden people say, now we're moving cultic.
Oh, you're a nut.
Or you're a
nut.
Yeah,
you're looking for those like-minded people I always hear about.
Yeah. Fanaticism, now you're a fanatic. So you can see where the devil gets in and plants in people's mind that moving for a community, moving for a church is you're becoming Jim Jones or cultic, yet they can move for every other reason under the sun.
Yeah.
But to move because we want to levitate and we want to produce a community that honors the Lord Jesus Christ all of a sudden is off the table because it's nutty.
Right.
And, of course, I think the listeners could see the point of that is that's a demonic deception to say that to move for a church or a community is stepping over a line. You bought the farm.
Yeah.
No, it's any further from the truth. It's a good way because we're trying to save this country.
Well, the way I put it is we're not moving to wait for the end of the world. We're moving to start the world on the right foot and doing it in our own little area of control. I'm not going to go somewhere and just build a wall and never come out of it. We want it to grow from there. We're planting seeds.
That's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up, Dutch, because our conception of a community is not a retreat in and of itself, because as we just spoke a few programs back of a more optimistic view of the future. So you and I are trying to build a community to retreat and simply protect ourselves, but the community is to leaven societies and be a light for other communities.
Export our ideas.
Now, certainly when we talked about last week about the local community and a militia, certainly protection is there.
It's part of it.
But it is not the number one ideal by any means.
Right.
So it's not looking for a place to crash during the end of the world.
Yeah.
While we do prepare for hard times, and that's why we mentioned a severe climate area may not be the best, because you do want to have a long growing season is ideal, for gardens and fruit trees and things like that. Let me say as another practical thing that to just be God and country, to tell people just to move together, where if you believe in God and you believe in country or the Constitution, that is probably not enough to hold you together through the tough times.
No, there'll be too many differences.
Yeah. A good example of that is up in the Kamiyai, Idaho, where Vogue Wright, some of you would remember, founded a place called Shenandoah, and I forget the other community there that he was trying to found.
Right.
And he said, anybody that loves God, country, and the Constitution, come on up.
Yeah.
Well, they found out right away that that was not quite enough common ground.
Yeah.
Because you have various people that believe in God have some pretty strange ideas out there that don't really fit into a community real, real well.
Yeah, I know three people who got involved in that, and that those three people had... They would not survive a three-day test in a Winnebago together.
Okay.
You know, and I don't understand that, how that, because it ultimately failed.
That's Almost Heaven was the other community.
Yeah.
And we got friends up there. I got friends that left the church at Cahuilla to go up there, yeah. And they're still my friends today. But are they really leavening society? Are they leavening the county?
Has it grown?
No, the community really hasn't done anything in terms of where you could go there and look and see, this is what we've done in... 15 years or so?
Yeah.
Because it's just too splintered.
Yeah.
It's just too splintered. Well, so the good people are there, but they have not
formed... No synergy.
There's not enough synergy. And synergy is something that's so important for a community. That's why one family, two families, it's very hard. You've got to have a half a dozen families where you have the synergy and the energy and the ability to really begin to leaven.
Yeah.
Really begin to leaven society. One of the things that we didn't talk about, and we could talk about here for just a minute, importance of coming back to community is the importance of learning to live on the land and off the land.
Sure.
And this is not an Amish type of a thing. Again, we talked about off the grid and not using technology. No, we'll use any technology out there that's available for the glory of God.
It's efficient and within our reach.
So if I'm going to cut a limb on a tree, I'm not going to use an old buck saw. I have an old buck saw,
yeah.
But I'm going to use my chainsaw. I want technology as my friend.
Yeah.
If I can turn on lights with electricity rather than a generator, I'll use, you know, Southern California Edison, so to speak.
Yeah, as long as it's there, use it.
And if we can afford it. Obviously, generators, wind technology, those things are great, and we can import them. So we're not talking about not using technology. So the skills of working the land, when we had a boys' ranch here at the church for many years, we found boys from the inner city that never knew how to use a shovel. They'd never had a shovel in their entire life. I met young men that had never seen a cow in real life. They'd seen on TV. They did not know how to use a hammer, so they did not have work skills.
Mm-hmm.
And these work skills go into every other area of life, not just using a shovel and digging a ditch.
Yeah.
But there are techniques to know how to dig a ditch so you don't break your back, you know, and things like that. So these are things that children and older folks need to teach young people. And so this is done generally. It can be really facilitated well in a community. Within a community is where we establish our cultural mores. I give the example, it's where the heartstrings and what's passionate about. We'll hear every now and then about a Muslim here in America who marries a 13-year-old girl, and then he's prosecuted because we have laws that says you can't marry a 13-year-old girl.
Right.
But they have customs, the Muslims have customs and mores that are different than ours. And we're losing the Christian, biblical customs and mores. I'll give an example to the world. And, for instance, I take my son to Disneyland, as you know, mm-hmm. and when we're at Disneyland, we watch the people standing in line, and there's thousands and thousands of people there, and it's a sea of tattooed humanity now.
Yeah.
As people stand there, and you see tattoos on the face,
tribal
and
multiple piercings,
tribal America. And then the question would be, how many of those people are going to churches somewhere?
Yeah.
And they are.
Yeah.
And we've got churches that accept this type of a body modification, body mutilation, and tattooing. This came from the primitive pagan cultures of the world. This didn't
directly
come from Christian preachers,
no.
Although they're tolerating it. So what I'm saying is the society at large has influenced the Christian community, and they're copying the world's ways of doing things.
Instead of the other way around, because we had a question, what does it mean by leaven? It's like the yeast in the bread affecting the whole loaf.
Right.
Society has affected the church in America rather than the church affecting society.
Yeah, it's an excellent question. Jesus said that the church, the kingdom of God, is like leaven hidden. It's like yeast hidden in the bread till the whole loaf is leavened, and then of course it rises because of the yeast.
Together.
And so that verse is an optimistic view of what the kingdom of God is to look like. It is not on the retreat. It is not hanging in there by a thread. It is to be marching and leavening all of society. So a Christian community then leavens society and influences the other societies around it rather than the world influencing the church.
But surely there must be areas that we're not allowed to leaven in, right?
That would be a theological view that I would not hold.
Okay.
There's no area outside. Let me give you a scripture for that. I know you're. That's good, Dutch. That's a good point. Peter tells us that God has given us all things that pertain to life and godliness, and that means there's not one area that the Word of God doesn't speak to.
Right.
All things that pertain to
politics,
life.
Entertainment, arts and entertainment.
Education,
yeah,
science,
definitely education.
The Word of God speaks to it.
So if
all.
We have the community and we're all like-minded in that same way, we will grow because we're all rowing in the same direction. If it was like a big
mm-hmm.
galley, and that's the key to all being like-minded.
Yeah, yeah. So talking about this concept of land and children learning to work the land, even if they don't have a giant garden or whatever, a good example is to watch the movie The Grapes of Wrath,
oh, yeah.
or read Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath. And the grandfather, because they had to move from the Dust Bowl to Oklahoma, when they moved, he was never the same. He basically withdrew in himself. He shut down. And then she said even the father, her husband, the father in the movie, not the grandfather, the father, he lost his place. He was no longer head of
the
household.
Leader of the family. It was Ma.
It was Ma. Ma had yeah. to hold it together because, you remember, you read the book evidently,
I love that
in high
book,
school.
Yeah.
So the grandfather lost his way, the father lost his way, and the mom had to hold it together. And then she had to talk her oldest son, Tom Joad, who mm-hmm. was always getting into trouble, but he was a good man. They were the ones holding it together.
Yeah.
So when we get off the land, we get into apartments, we get into townhouses, we begin to lose our way.
Yeah.
There's something about Christians being tied to the land, which is a good, a very good thing. And here's an example that I did not give last time, Dutch, of what importance of a community, what a community could do, and that is in the area of teaching apprenticeship. And we've lost that. You know,
yeah.
everybody can remember the word apprenticeship. You know, and how and there was an apprentice to be a blacksmith or an apprentice to be a silversmith or something like that. And you'd take a young man and you might train him and he may work for you for a long period of time and may not get hardly anything.
It's room and board, maybe.
Maybe just room and board, right, yeah. as you're teaching him a skill. And today, if you tried to go to a, and I've done this, matter of fact, I tried to do this with a local businessman about my son when he was about 16. I said, I'd like you to teach him the trade. Just let him hang out with you. Oh, no, insurance reasons. What if he got hurt? And even though he was
labor.
All labor board,
yeah.
child labor laws. You know, this tribal, I understand about children working for, you know, 2 cents a
yeah,
day, 12 hours a day. We're not
sweat.
We're not talking about sweat factories. Yeah. But we're talking about a concerned parent saying,
building them.
This man in my community has a skill, and I want my son to learn that skill.
Yeah.
Therefore, the man, through a covenant agreement, might say, okay, but, and that my son needs certain work skills. This is when he was young. This is just an example. Just to give an example, and say he needs to learn skills, but he's only 13 years old. Maybe he can come at the local grocer, and you can pay him $1 an hour to box groceries
mm-hmm.
or move the boxes of green beans, so he knows how to make the stack true and straight, yeah. not crooked. He learns basic working skills. Now, if you try to do that just anywhere else, like you said, child labor laws, you're going to get
yeah.
in trouble.
Yeah, you need a small town.
OSHA's going to come in. You've got to have a guy that understands exactly what you're doing, what you're trying to do, and you know that the man, and that he's going to sweep in front of the store, using the same example, and the boy's going to get $1 an hour to sweep mm-hmm. because he needs to learn how to sweep correctly. There's a correct
yeah.
way to sweep. There, you know, to not leave a bunch of leaves or a bunch of dirt. You know, to do it properly and do it as unto the Lord. And you're willing. And the grocer says, I can't afford to pay someone minimum wage $8 an hour to sweep my sidewalk. I'll do
yeah.
it myself. But I can pay a 12-year-old
especially
kid.
If you got to watch him and train him and guide his hands all the time.
Right, and teach him how to work because there is
yeah.
a proper way to hold a broom and an improper way to hold a broom, so forth. And if you're working a push broom, there's a special way that you'd use a push broom.
Everything takes skill.
And so we don't allow our children to learn these skills because in a regular, in normal communities and cities, it's everybody's scared to death of
yeah.
getting themselves in trouble. So apprenticeship and good working skills is something that we could teach in a local. Town level. So I think those are important things that I didn't get to that you know we need to consider. And so there's some other things that we need to consider. And let's just talk about a minute this is an article from a lady by Ann Bird writing about communities. And she says, in the early days of our faith, it was not so much what believers said that converted the world and destroyed Roman tyranny and debauchery. Now we'd like to destroy the tyranny and debauchery that's
sure
in our
would.
Land. It was their biblical lifestyle that gave power to their preaching. It was their willingness, often at great personal risk, to implement biblical principles in a parallel culture. beside which the degradation of paganism was exposed and routed. It was their proclamation with their lives, not just their mouths, that Jesus Christ is Lord of Lords and King of Kings. It was the demonstration by their example that this king has a constitution, the Bible, to which we live, and this document will bring justice, prosperity, and peace to both the individual and the culture, as was also evidenced in early early America. So what you saw was even at the New Testament church being able to leaven society by having enough synergy, enough people together in a local given place to influence even Roman society. She goes on here to say, in the most important arena of justice and judgment, the early Christians refused to go to the corrupt courts of Rome, but instead applied the biblical standard of judging controversies within the church. When the surrounding unbelievers saw the speed and fairness with which justice was administered, they began to bring their own disputes to the Christians to judge. Through this process, an arc of justice was built that passed sentence on Roman injustice and inefficiency. If you study the history of the early church there in the time of Rome, you find out that that the Romans even began to come to some of the Christian courts because they knew they would actually get a fair trial. And Paul talks about that in Corinthians. He says, look, let even the least esteemed in the church judge. They have the ability through the Spirit of God to make some good, wholesome, right, and wise decisions. And so you have church courts, or what's known as historically courts ecclesiastical, ecclesiastical courts. And then you have civil courts and what people have tried to do, the common law court movement and so forth. Yeah. It's not working because they do not have community established. It would work in a local community, these common law or civil courts.
Combined forces aren't there.
So we need to take a break.
Yeah, we're going
to
take a break right now. We'll be back after this message, and we'll be right back on Liberty Tree Radio and Stronghold Radio with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell from the Church of Kaweah with Practical Christianity.
Yes, to defend. Oh, like a flood covering the kingdom and hungering for blood. The Lord will raise a standard up and lead his people on. The Lord of hosts will go before, defeating every foe, defeating every foe. For the Lord is our defense, yes, to defend us. The Lord is our defense, yes, to defend. Sing it out. The Lord is our defense, yes, to defend us.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info. And we are back. I'm Dutch Jones, your host here on Stronghold Radio, jumping over to Liberty Tree Radio. Thank you so much, Ed, for hooking us up and spreading us around the country. I'd like to thank Patriot Broadcasting Network, all the other folks, Scotty out there in New York, all you guys that are taking the signal and redistributing it. It has an effect. You wouldn't believe the email I'm getting. Together with our little effort, God is changing lives. And that's what it's all about. And it is Thursday. It's time for Practical Christianity once again, the second half hour of our show where we're talking about Christian Covenant Communities with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell. And we'll continue without further ado.
Okay, Dutch, on this next half hour, what I wanted to do is kind of talk to the folks about and read some excerpts from a friend of ours, Pastor Thomas McConnell. He's in Rayville, Missouri, about an hour or so outside of Kansas City,
mm-hmm.
and he's much further along the road in terms of community and actually working out these things than
and
we
are.
And
we're going to try to get him on for future shows,
and
by
I,
the way.
Yeah, I tried to get him on and it just hasn't worked out so far. But he wrote an article a few years back called Rayville, Vision and Some Lessons Learned Thus Far. And so he's been out there in Rayville, Missouri. Rayville, Missouri, it's called the Village of Rayville. I believe it's about, he chose a town that had about, I think around 200 people in it. And I believe it's incorporated, and so it has its own governing body.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been mayor at one time. He was mayor of the town.
Great.
And so he's gone through and seen a lot of obstacles on the road that we would face or that anybody would face when they're trying to do community like this. And he's definitely met with a lot of resistance, but he can tell you the good things and the bad things. And so he did an article about what he was doing in Rayville and why he went there. And I want to share some practical things with your listeners. He says, to many, he's talking about Rayville, Missouri now, where they have a community that they're working on, to many mainstream Bible-believing Christians, we are an oddity. Okay, we haven't put money, especially borrowed, into building a nice church facility.
Mm-hmm.
He says, we are using an old 1894 church building, which
awesome.
Is in serious need of siding and repair, etc., but rather have poured our time, resources, and sweat into seeking to get our families going economically in established local businesses while also building strong personal relationships, which has resulted in some successes and failures, all of which has not come easy. The concept of community and local business is so important in hiring of your own. For example, many people worked for, a few years ago, people that had worked for the Polaroid Corporation or different corporations for many years, all of a sudden found when they were 2 years from retirement,
cut loose.
Yeah. See? And many of the corporations that people work for are pagan corporations, and so the work that they're doing is going into the coffers of people making a profit who use it to do more evil and destroy America.
Right.
So certainly, and I understand jobs are scarce, and I'm not saying anybody quit their job if they're in a corporation, but understand it's small businesses that hire 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 that are really important in America,
right.
Not the people that hire 1,000, yeah, exactly. So that's what he's talking about, establishing local businesses, and so the money's not been put into fancy facades on the church and so forth. He says, patience is a virtue that all of us are going to need in the immediate years to come because progress is likely to go at a snail's pace. We have often been asked, why struggle so hard in a rural area that has seen its better days when there is so much opportunity to be had in the big cities and modern agribusiness regions of the nation like California, Iowa, etc.? Believe it or not, Rayville was at one time the prime business location in Missouri for poultry production. This was around 1900. It mostly died with the crash of 1929 and slowly deteriorated since. However, contrary to the status quo, we find its present dilapidated state ideal for pioneering since it makes the land very affordable. This is one of the problems that we've had here in Cahuilla and Three Rivers. As you know, Dutch, folks couldn't sell in the valley, make a profit, and come here. They can sell land or sell a home in San Francisco or Los Angeles and make a profit and come here. But if they're down in the valley, they cannot do that. So we have land that, unfortunately, that is very expensive for the norm. Yeah. So we understand that that's
although
difficult.
That's changing.
It is changing a little bit, but it's still difficult.
Yeah.
So he says one reason why he chose this area of Missouri, because the land was very affordable, so folks didn't have to go into, you know, big debt.
That's being a good steward of your resources right there.
See, how are young people, say young couples under 30 years of age, going to be able to afford land without owing their soul to the company store otherwise?
Yeah.
So that was one thing he had in mind. He says the surface and infrastructure, particularly unappealing to those people who like to live at the surface level of things. What he's talking about is the sidewalks are broken up and it doesn't have a buildings, storefronts need paint and things like that. But he says that doesn't
bother us. They
still
function, they just aren't pretty.
For this reason, Rayville has held little attraction to politicians and bankers, and that's what we like, he says, and that's what they have found to be a good thing, because we don't want the bankers in there messing around with what we're doing.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. So he says, we moved here from a beautiful, well-kept city and look forward to a time when Rayville will be restored to one. There's nothing wrong with having a beautiful, well-kept city. But for the work we see, to do a picture-perfect city, it will not do. Why? Try finding a well-kept, well-infrastructured city that is not vigorously controlled by a pagan majority. See? Go to your beautiful city and you'll find it's got ordinances for you can't have this, you have to have this kind of sign, which costs more.
This size of sign, this size of lettering.
Exactly.
You can't have neon, you can't have overhangs. It's
ad nauseum.
Yeah.
And so people just say, oh, forget it. So he says, the clash of worldviews would gridlock any major effort in building a decidedly Christian community, which is our aim. So we could ask the question, what is our aim? That is, we want to have a decidedly Christian community. And it should be every Christian's aim to think that way.
Fully functioning, self-sustaining.
Yeah. So he said we needed to start with something where the basic infrastructure was in place. Streets, electricity, water, phone, etc. But the government and control was for the taking through normal legal methods. All right? Through voting and so forth.
Yeah.
What he's saying is, like we talked about, ideally, the best way would be to buy 200 acres, 500 acres of raw land, divide it up, and there you go. Or 100 acres of raw land, divide it up. But then you're going to have, somebody has to have the expense of getting the roads and the sewage.
You need either
water,
a benefactor or a huge nest egg.
Right, and so most of us don't have that.
No.
So while I like that idea, it's not right now for us. But you can find towns that are, the infrastructure is worn and frayed, but then the ability to start with a building or a business. For instance, I believe they started a bakery in Rayville, Missouri at one time. And the bakery doesn't no longer exist, but they started one. They just did it, I think.
Started making pizzas, and they just
started doing it. And then the county came over, took a look at it, and said, well, if you make this one change to the sink, we'll let you go. And so they did. They said, okay, no problem. We'll make this change. And so there they were, baking away without all these special permits. Yeah, not oppressive. All right. Rayville fits the ticket well, as we do not have any real competition. Rayville's tired appearance has been a providential blessing because it has protected us from an onslaught of believers just looking for another pretty church and town that they don't care who controls so long as their financial and personal needs are met.
Thin-skinned.
People that are just looking for a beautiful place and maybe I'll just watch it grow and kick back. He says that people like that don't
require sweat.
Exactly, Dutch. We seek fellow pioneers who can see the past the surface level unto the substance and are willing to roll up their sleeves and build by God's means, not man's, that means no usury and borrowing, a solid Christian community with us. Don't let me give you the wrong impression, though the Rayville area is actually very beautiful, with wooded hills covered in thick hardwood forests.
I've seen the pictures. It's beautiful.
Fingers of open pastures and rich farmland and lots of small streams and streams and ponds. The fishing, he says, and hunting is superb. As far as farming goes, the land is very good, though just hilly enough to keep out the big agribusinesses, corporations who
Excellent.
Must have vast expanses of nearly level soil to be profitable.
That's so a good point.
Agribusiness
I didn't
think doesn't of. Want to come in there.
Yeah, you're not going to have corporations
yeah.
seizing farms.
Thus, our area is conducive to the small family farm and business, though close enough to more populated areas to develop markets. I mentioned he's just an hour, a little over an hour outside of Kansas City, Missouri. Big, mm-hmm. as big as you want to get. Rayville, he says, is like hundreds of Rayvilles. In other words, does it have to be Rayville, Missouri? No. Does it have to be Three Rivers or Cahuilla, California, where we're from? No. We're just whetting
yeah.
your appetite.
Upstate Michigan, whatever town
yeah,
that what, those folks are
whatever it happens
doing.
To be. It says, Rayville is like hundreds of Rayvilles across the nation that have undergone the destructive demolition of debt-based economics over the last 60 years. It went from being a vibrant local community to a worn-out bedroom community in need of serious urban renewal, which is so much the better, as I see it, when one is in the business of rebuilding a community from the group up in a manner pleasing to the Lord. Land is very affordable, taxes are comparatively low, and there is a minimal amount of government bureaucracy and control. See, that is a big one, that amount of government bureaucracy and control. I've seen businesses, people have wanted to establish businesses in areas nearby, and they just say, oh, by the time the county read all their regs, they just said, oh, forget
it's
it.
Not worth it.
It wasn't worth it.
Too many chains.
Yeah. He says, it is a quiet, Rayville is a quiet town of about 200 people that is not far from the amenities and necessities of modern life. In other words, the hospital's maybe 15, 20 minutes away. It's not that mm-hmm. far. You can get the
and
things
if you need
that
bigger
you need.
Stuff, there's Kansas City an
yeah,
hour away.
Right, exactly. So those that's ideal. Ray County itself has only 22,000 inhabitants,
oh, nice.
And so we are quite rural. So there's a big example.
Yeah.
The county of Ray is just only 22,000, so a few people could influence
if you ran
Ray County.
If you ran for the County Board of Supervisors, you'd only need 6,000 votes probably to win.
Wow. See, that's what we're talking
and
about.
And that's if everybody votes.
Yeah, right.
It's
by
probably much lower than that.
That's exactly what he's saying. As one of the local residents joked, Rayville is not the end of the world, but you can see it from here. What we're doing, folks, so I'm reading this, is to give you practical considerations. Cause this
people
is
that are doing it, boots on the ground, stuff yeah. that's already been done.
He says, but someday, perhaps, we will make the cover of better communities under God, Lord willing. We are not going to make better homes and gardens, but we might make better communities under God, Lord willing. We believe God has led us here for reasons most people would not consider. Rayville is not on the beaten path. It is plain without being... without the dazzling prosperity that pagan economics brings and the strings that are attached to pagan economics, and the people here have not sold their souls to the company store. Now, just another sentence. Sure. The affordable arable land and lack of onerous government intrusion does not fool us, however, for the work of community building takes a synergy. And this is what the brothers and sisters in Rayville need now. They still need another few more families to really make this synergy come alive. And, of course, yeah. that's what we're looking for here, is a half a dozen families more to really make it have the energy. Because you can't do everything. I can't do everything.
Yeah.
And when people get older, they can't do as much. And when people and then others folks are really busy with their families, raising their families, it takes an X amount of people to really get things going.
Well, it's like the analogy you used about leavening the bread. You just don't throw the yeast into the dough and stand back and go, okay, do your stuff. There has to be a working. You have to knead it in. You have to shape it. You have to form it. You have to put it in a pan. You have to prepare an oven. It's
Lots
God's not just going to go wave his magic wand, which is what a lot of modern Christians
yes.
want. Poof, there it is. It's going to require a lot of work.
I'm glad you're mentioning that. In other words, we want, because we live in an age of instant mashed potatoes and instant you know, oatmeal,
right?
And we got copiers that copy things and
microwave
1 second
food,
or whatever
yeah.
microwave. You know, and I get impatient with our church copier and it cranks things out probably you know every half second or something.
Yeah,
1 second,
yeah, yeah.
Then it gets too slow. So you're right. Yeah, people, when you're thinking about community, you have to be in it for the long haul. All right,
yeah.
And I'll talk about that long haul in just a minute. The importance of the long haul. So he says that. Building community takes a synergy of dedicated believers to accomplish ones who are willing to sacrifice and forbear in the immediate to reap the rewards of the long term.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have a long-term view. And the Bible speaks of that. I usually open up with a scripture verse every time. I haven't today. Let me kind of begin to close here with a scripture verse.
We've got about 10 minutes.
Yeah, it says, "Give ear, O my people, to my law." This is Psalm 78. "Incline your ears to the words of my mouth." He says, "We will not hide these things from our children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he hath done. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers." Now notice that they should make them known to their children. The commandment was not to teach your children algebra or chemistry necessarily. The commandment is to teach your children about God and the ways of God and the things of God and the law of God. And obviously it's okay to teach algebra and chemistry if you want to. But the commandment was that the children would know the God of their fathers. And he says in verse 6, this is key, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children. So what you have here is you have generational thinking when it comes to the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
I like what a minister friend of mine by the name of Paul Jaley has said. He said when he was talking to his son about these concepts, he said, "Son, your father may never live to see the things that he's teaching and preaching right now, but you probably will."
Yeah.
So I may not live to see all the things that I'm teaching and preaching right now, but I'm thinking about, in other words, according to Psalm 78, verse 6, the generation to come, and the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children. I have, Lord willing, I have grandchildren and great-grandchildren that are not even conceived yet, but that will be living 20 years from now, 50 years from now, that need to live in a land of freedom and not be under the yoke of bondage.
We're not doing it just for us.
So we're not doing it just for us. And this is what, it's hard for Christians. They got this idea that I want it for me right now. Well, look at the founding fathers, what they paid. I think one of the Adams, John Quincy Adams, said, "America, you'll never know what it costs to bring you the freedoms that we have."
Yeah.
Read the book, The Lies of the Signers, you know, what happened to many of them, you know, going into bankruptcy and poverty and so forth.
Total loss.
And being beaten by the British and arrested and so on and so forth. We think of the toll, the heavy toll that the Pilgrims in 1620, when they came to Plymouth, paid. You know, the first winter, half their population died.
50% casualties.
Yeah. Holland, Michigan, first couple of years, many people dying off.
Yeah.
So it's people that, I like that phrase from the America the Beautiful, in the song America the Beautiful, who more than self their country loved, and mercy more than life. We need people who love their country, and they love their God, and they love children that they cannot see. That's why I appreciated my father. He died a couple of years ago at the age of 82. But in his 80s, in his late 70s, he was still working. He knew his time was short, but he was working for children that he would never see, that they would be born in a free land. And that's what we need to have, that same vision. That's what we honor, those patriots, the faith of our fathers living still in spite of dungeon, fire, and sword.
That's how I judge when I meet people that claim to be part of the militia or part of the movement. And if they don't use the holy cause of liberty phrase, I start to question them. I say, well, what are you in this for? And usually I'll get, well, just to be left alone. But eventually when they get down to, well, I'm doing this so my grandkids can live free.
Yes.
So that my kid will know what it's like to not have to put on a helmet to ride his bike or get fined.
Yes, yes.
That's when I know that they're on the right path. And I don't have to spend a lot of time giving them the basics, and we can move on to higher things. So I judge a person's moral compass by whether or not they grasp that concept you just shared.
Yeah. We were talking in church Wednesday night about Barzillai, gentleman that was 80 years old, and during time of military coup between David and his son Absalom, he had to make a choice of who he was going to support. And he was a wealthy man, and he made the choice to support David, even though it looked like David was going to be defeated. He was losing the coup. That looked like Absalom was going to win the coup. And so you have a man 80 years of age. He's going out in the wilderness. He meets David. He brings him food. He's still on the firing line, supporting the cause at 80 and not well. And he says, because I've made a choice. And we need people that are going to make a choice for liberty, for America, and against the New World Order now, and against tyranny now, even though it may cost them. Because we don't know how the Lord's going to, you know, how this all this will shake down. So, very good verse. Psalm 78:6 teaches that we think generationally, just not what's good for you and I right now, Dutch, just like you brought up.
Yeah.
And he says, what are we going to teach our children? Verse 7, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. We want to teach our children that they would set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. You know, there's a verse in Joshua or Judges, it talks about Joshua passes from the scene of action. It says there was a lot of godly men at the time of Joshua, but there's a tragedy. It says their children did not know the God of the fathers.
Yeah.
So while Joshua kept a good testimony of love for the Lord and faithfulness to God, he did not pass the vision to his children, so the children went into idolatry.
So that goes heavily into the role of the father in the family as being the priest of his household and ensuring that his children know that knowledge of the Lord Almighty is the basis of all knowledge.
Right. And so in community, this is the best way that we can teach the godly principles that we hold dear. We can do it as a family, and it works as a family up to a certain point, and we do it as a church congregation. But when people are living 60 miles away and they come to a church from 50 miles and 40 miles
once
and 30
a week
miles,
for 3 hours or
then
whatever,
they're not going to be we're not leavening society we should. But when we're close together and we
shoulder
have synergy, people are looking on, and we are being a city set on a hill, as John Winthrop said in his famous work just before, A Model of Christian
Not
Charity.
Not Reagan. Reagan. Everybody thinks Reagan said, the city on a hill, the city of light. I'm like, no, it wasn't Reagan who invented that.
And, and Winthrop got it from the Bible, because Jesus said, the Christians are a city set on a hill. This is what he said. This is a community of Puritans that are going to establish a town in Massachusetts, and while they're still in the ship, before they get off, he writes this famous writing called A Model of Christian Charity, and he says it rests now to make some application of this discourse. He's been talking about the need for love and challenging one another and this new city we're going to found, which gave occasion to the writing of it. Herein are four things to be propounded. First, the persons. Secondly, the work. And thirdly, the end. And fourthly, the means. Okay? So he says, first, the persons. We are a company of professing ourselves members of Christ, in which respect only, though we were absent from each other many miles and had our employments as far distant, we ought to account ourselves knit together by this bond of love and live in the exercise of it, if we would have comfort of our being in Christ. This was notorious in the practice of the Christians in former times, as it is testified of the Waldenses, from the mouth of one to the adversaries. They used to love of their own religion even before they were acquainted with them. The children are getting understanding of this.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, for the work we have in hand, it is by mutual consent through a special overvaluing providence and more than an ordinary approbation of the churches of Christ. He says, basically what he's saying here is we cohabit together and we work together, God will be with us in both our civil government and in our ecclesiastical. And then he says, thirdly, the end is to improve our lives, to do more service to the Lord, the comfort and increase of the body of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Wherefore, we are members that ourselves and our posterity, that's those kids that are coming on, may be better preserved from the common corruptions of this evil world, to serve the Lord and work out our salvation under the power and purity of His holy ordinances.
Wow.
And then he says, fourthly, for the means whereby we must be affected. He says they are twofold, a conformity with the work and the end we aim at. These we see are extraordinary, therefore we must not content ourselves with usual ordinary means. I've taught many times that extraordinary circumstances call for extraordinary measures.
Yeah.
And sometimes we are, as we face that, we need to consider that we are at a time of extraordinary possibilities, so our measures, our tactics may be extraordinary. For instance, if I have gangrene in my arm, it's an extraordinary situation. A Band-Aid, Bactine's not going to help. I'm going to have to take an extraordinary measure, and that is I'm going to have to cut my arm off to save my life.
Yes.
We need to move while we still can, folks, and take some extraordinary measures.
Amen.
And then lastly, in A Model of Christian Charity, Winthrop said in 1630, we shall find that the God of Israel is among us when 10 of us shall be able to resist 1,000 of our enemies. When He, and that God will find, God did that for the American patriots. When He shall make us a praise and glory that men shall say of succeeding plantations, the Lord make it like that of New England. For we must consider that we shall be a city upon a hill. The eyes of all the people are upon us, so that if we shall deal falsely with our God in His work that which we have undertaken, and so cause Him to withdraw His present help from us, we shall be made a story and a byword through the world. But if our hearts shall turn away, so that we will not obey, but shall be seduced and worship other gods, our pleasure and profits, and serve them, it is propounded unto us this day We shall surely perish out of the good land whither God will pass us over this vast sea to possess it. Then he concludes with, let us therefore choose life that we and our seed may live. That's generationally again. By obeying his voice and cleaving to him, for he is our life and our prosperity. So I challenge us once again to consider the concept of Christian community and Christian churches. You mentioned about the Lone Ranger mentality here just before we went on the air about Lone Rangers that don't exercise and go into a church anywhere. Mm-hmm. Folks, if you don't go to a regular church somewhere, you are rejecting the authority of Jesus Christ on the earth, because Jesus said his authority is in his church. Mm-hmm. The power of excommunication, the power of binding and loosing, according to Jesus, is in the local church. It's not limited to the church at Cahuilla. It's in the local church, the Baptist church in our area, and in your area, the Assembly of God church, and the Presbyterian church, and other Christian churches. They have the power of binding and loosing. If you refuse to submit to any church, and you're a Lone Ranger, and you're just out there listening to the radio once in a while, or Christian television, you are a rebel in the kingdom of God, and you are rejecting the authority of Jesus Christ, because it doesn't reside within me alone, Dutch, and it doesn't reside within you alone, but it resides within the believers in a local body. Yeah. They have the authority to excommunicate. They have the authority to loose and bring into the community new creations in Christ Jesus.
And even though it may take a flashlight, a shovel, and a pickaxe, there are good churches out there. And
right.
you can find them on the Dutch Jones page. You can find them on the Our Church page. The Black Robe Regiment churches are out there. We're not talking about a building. We're not talking about going, you know, to any willy-nilly church. You have to do due diligence. In this time and place that God has put us, and we only have about a minute left here, what excuse does the modern Christian patriot have compared to the founding fathers, the people that came before us who had it really bad, to not seek out this solution, these Christian covenant communities? Because they're already out there. We're just one.
Mm-hmm.
There are several out there already. You can find them on the internet.
Yes.
What excuse do they have? I mean, there's no hardship today that is anything compared to what even the pioneers in the 1830s faced coming out here.
No matter where they go, there's a Walmart nearby. No matter where they go, there's a hardware store if they need a nail. The pioneers and our founding fathers, they didn't have any nails if they needed a nail. You know, they couldn't go to the local hardware store. The hospitals are still close by, an hour away, if you need, or a half hour away. I don't see any excuse. I don't see any excuse. But they need. Go ahead, and folks, and study this out, consider it, pray about it, and see if this is not one of the best avenues that we can use to bring liberty to the land once again.
That's a great point to end on. I am Dutch Jones. This has been Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell from the Church at Cahuilla in Cahuilla, California. You can Google any of those things I just said and find us. You can go to dutchjones.info, and there are links to all of that. Jones is J-O-E-N-S. You've got to remember, folks, we're just one voice in the wilderness. There are several out there. If you listen to Liberty Tree Radio and Stronghold Radio during the day, you know that we are not alone in this. We are not the inventors of this idea. We are just sharing it with you. Instead of complaining all day and whining about what's going on in America, we offer solutions. And this is our solution. Oh, and there's not going to be a show tomorrow because we're getting ready for training this weekend. Thank you, Stacy. There will be no show tomorrow. We'll just repeat this show. So tell your friends, come and listen to it. And remember, the sword is heavy, the battle is hard, but victory belongs to the Lord alone. God bless you all.